Welcome in to the Illini Inquirer podcast. It is Jeremy Warner with you on this Friday afternoon. We're going to talk some Illini football today live on our YouTube channel. Welcome in. Appreciate you guys being here or listening on the podcast on the playback. We're going to focus on Illinois football today. Joey Wagner joins me to break down and react to all that's happened with spring and summer recruiting. Illinois has added many, many commitments over the last 2 months. So it's kind of look back and see what has been good in this class. What are kind of the question marks we still have about Illinois football recruiting? Joey and I haven't been on the podcast here for about 2 weeks since I've been on vacation, so he was holding down the fort. We appreciate him. We're going to talk some Illini football recruiting. Stay tuned for that next on the Illini Inquirer podcast. All right, welcome into the Illini Inquirer podcast. It is Jeremy Warner and Joey Wagner. Haven't been together on this for a while. Haven't seen you in a while, Joey. How you doing, buddy? You are muted, Joe.
We're back.
Yes, we're back.
Nailed the intro on that. It was good, man. It was nice to talk to Brad Underwood last week. We're starting to get into full football mode. Like, the 4th of July to me is kind of summer is over because it starts to get position primers, which will start rolling out in the next few days. Then you get into Big Ten media days, which has grown to me, not to sidetrack, but it's grown. Like, I'm always so excited to get there because, like, yes, yeah, content again. And, like, we have the shout out to Illinois. They give us very good access at Big Ten media days. I hope everyone appreciates the pods and getting a chance to talk to those players and know that. But then you sit in there for a little bit and it's like, oh boy, I don't have the patience. They're like, you see the Big 12 media days where everyone kind of has their head in their hands. We have all – what? There's two things. We've all asked a stupid question that has made someone put their head in their hands, and we've all put our head in our hands.
Yeah.
That has no bearing on anything, but summer's over is really what I'm trying to say, and I'm excited to start getting to some real football stuff.
At the same time, we're really in the middle of summer because, like, summer workouts have started for basketball, and Kyle and I podcasted about that yesterday. Go back and listen to that or watch that if you missed it. It was a great breakdown. And we have some basketball recruiting happening. We just had a huge month of football recruiting, which is why we're doing this podcast. But we're kind of in this dead zone when it comes to, like, you know, availabilities of, like, you know, the players just got back to campus. The coaches are out recruiting. Some of them in football are getting their vacations in right now. But we're kind of on the precipice of the start of training camp, which starts later this month or early August. We have football media days, as you said, coming up. But we don't get to see a lot or talk a lot with too many people. We got Brad last week. We might get him next week at some point. But, like, there's not a ton of that. So a lot of it's just kind of looking ahead to what will be. And that's why Kyle's been doing a great job with the basketball summer outlooks, the player outlooks. Go check those out. He's got Zvonimir Ivicic today. And you and I are busy working on our position primers, which is a lot of kind of recap, but also looking ahead to what will be, what could be with Illinois football. We'll do a lot of the preview stuff here on the podcast, but we're going to start rolling those out this week, Joey, and kind of breaking down each position by position kind of gets us back into the mindset of Illinois football. We're close, right? In a month from now, we're going to be knee-deep in training camp.
Yeah, and I'm excited for that. You're right. We just get ahead. We will probably not see much for training camp. That's just the truth of it. I know people are tired of hearing that rehash, but especially with the new defense, we're not going to see a lot. There are some frustrations that come with that. We want to see. We want to be able to ask more informed questions, but we do talk to a lot of people during that stretch. It is good to ask around a little bit, but I would expect this season, more than any recent seasons, is going to be a bigger kind of orange and blue cloak blocking everything until probably, let's be honest, probably the Duke game, right? They can be a little more vanilla against UAB, you would think. And so we still got a little bit before we know more or we can see more, but at least just the ability to talk and to have some conversations and be inquisitive is exciting to be on the horizon.
Yeah, so in this podcast, we're going to focus on the recruiting side. We'll do more of the actual on-field for the 2026 Illini football team. We've talked a lot about a lot of those things, but Joey, we did a big recruiting podcast leading into June where Illinois had four commitments, right? Like, a lot's changed since then, as Illinois now is up to 15 commitments, another top target. Trezevan Boyd is going to announce his decision coming up in a couple days, and Illinois is sitting really well in that one. So 11 commitments in the month of June here for Illinois football. So I figured it was a good time to kind of look back and talk about the positives that we've seen, because there were some really good positives, especially in state and at certain positions, and also some question marks, which there are going to be question marks no matter how many prospects you add. If you're number 62 recruiting class in the country, even if the quantity is low, there's going to be some question marks in all of that. And I do think there's a lot of them. But they had to get to work, Joey, and they did add 11 commitments and 11 of their top targets here.
Yeah, they filled out the base of their class, which is what we thought was going to happen. Ideally, yeah, you'd like to see that higher than number 62 nationally. We can talk about the reasons for that, and still there's still optimism that comes with what they have in their class. But this was build the base of a smaller class. We know this is going to be a smaller class. I saw an excuse to not get some more four stars. We just knew that it was going to there's so many. What are we calling them now, Jeremy? First and second year redshirt freshman, however you want to.
Can we talk about that? Because yeah. I've reached out to people. You and I were starting to do these position primers. Now with the 5-for-5 rule, which I think really benefits Illinois potentially for the class of 2027, I've reached out to some people in our network of like, hey, do we have like a style guide of how we want to go about doing this? Like, on our scholarship chart, roster chart, I have fifth year, fourth year, third year, second year, first year. I just think it's simple, and that's the way I would go with it. But I know freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, that's kind of the traditional of what we've done all this time. And, you know, you like talking about freshmen, not first-year players. And then you could just add fifth year to it. So it's interesting because some schools – like I think Iowa are doing first year, second year, third year. I think Illinois, you said, was going to do freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, fifth year. But those are things we got to talk about with 5-for-5 now.
Yeah, it's just being consistent. I'm curious what other reporters are going to do with that and how they're going to break that down. But that's a significant change, right? And we do know that through the month of July, I don't want to get off base here, but someone's probably listening and saying, well, so-and-so had a medical red shirt. I think July is the month where you've can file your petitions to the NCAA, and I don't know that we're going to get a bunch of clarity there, but I do expect there to be some, I don't know, exceptions in this as they start to roll this out thoroughly for players who have already maybe received a medical hardship and all of those things. So there's still some questions we have with that. I am a sucker for a little bit of traditionalism, and I like
you're the romantic
freshman through senior plus fifth year. But I get it, right? Like, we're not really talking about some traditions anymore in the way that we talk about college athletics. So we'll see. I'm curious how that goes. But that's been a big topic this offseason. And I think it can really help Illinois football. And, I mean, really on the other side of Ubbin as well. We're talking football. Or on the other side of Kirby, we're talking football here. And I do think it can help them.
I just think of, like, Braden Trimble. He's really a redshirt freshman, right? Like, do I call him a sophomore? Do I call him a second-year guy? Oh, there's the puppy. How's the puppy doing?
I know. He's going to bark. I'll bring him.
That's going to be
on his way to barking, and I had to pick him up.
dad dog. Love it. It could help. We should probably bring that up. 5-for-5. There's some really good players for Illinois. That opens up the potential of returning for another year. Christian Abney, I know you're working on your tight end preview here soon. Like, that's a significant player. Caden Fagan is potential player. It gets another year of eligibility. You think what that could do for the tight end position. Brandon Henderson, Khalil Valentine, Juice Clark, Mac Rosetich, really important players, Joey. And then you think down the line, some of the players, Joe Barna, you know, is a junior right now. That's a third-year player. If he only had 2 years of eligibility, it feels way different now that he's got 3 years of eligibility left.
Yeah, you look back at some of those. Why did they only play so-and-so in 5 games but 50 snaps? Well, that doesn't really matter as much right now,
imagine
right?
Imagine Hank Beatty with a fifth year.
Yeah, Hank Beatty's probably looking back like, hey, wait, what's going on? Can I get that extra year? He's now with the Titans, of course. But that's significant, especially when you look at, as you mentioned, a Brandon Henderson, a Caden Fagan, a Juice Clark, Joe Barna. Like, there are impact players who could have an additional year. So I think that also throws a wrench into, as we're talking recruiting, they all tie together. It throws, hey, what do you need? Is this guy going to go pro? Are we going to get him for another year? How is all this going to play out for Illinois? And, you know, we'll see how that goes. But I think that's really going to help them in terms of retaining. They've done a good job with retaining those stars, and to get another year of those guys, I think could be significant.
All right. By the way, we already got two people commenting about Joey looking trim and fit. The homeowner, the dog owner, is that leading to it, Joe? You looking svelte?
Yeah, the dog doesn't listen to me at all, so I have to walk him around forever. You know, there's outdoor stuff to do. I don't eat fast food as much. In fact, the last two times I've got it, so I feel like you. I'm like, this is poisoning my soul right now.
Except chicken fingers. You know,
we'll have to, I'll have to do a little bit of the pregame work to get back to our road trip status where we eat like crap and drink too much and cover football as best we can.
Yeah, that's living, though. L-I-V-I-N. I appreciate it. All right, let's start this off, Joey. Let's break down what we learned about Illinois football recruiting over the last month or two, spring and summer. So I'll let you start off. A positive or a question mark that you have after Illinois has added 11 commitments over the last couple months?
Yeah, I don't want to belabor this one because I know we've talked about it a lot, but I want to start with where I think some of their bigger wins came. Justin Stepp's really good at this. He is really, really good at his job. You look at some of the younger guys he's got in that room, these good recruiting wins on those guys, Nas Rankin, Braden Trimble, just building that receiver room for the long term. But then you go and you win a race for Bennett Conkey. And obviously there's all sorts of speed puns you can throw in there. But to get that recruiting win and the way that he blew up like that, that's a big deal. Then you go to Texas and you get Brody Knowles, who maybe the recruiting ranking isn't there, but he is a big-bodied guy, and they won a recruitment head-to-head at the end over TCU. That's a big deal, man. Is you still like – you're adding to your passing attack that's continued to grow. We like what they've done in the quarterback room, right? But now you've got to pair that with guys who are going to catch those footballs. And the way Justin Stepp has built that room in the long term is really, really impressive.
Yeah, can I take this further out? I might be stepping on your toes a little bit here. My biggest positive is the holdover staff members, the guys who have been here for multiple years, they killed it. I thought they did a fantastic job. And it starts with Justin Stepp, with Bennett Conkey and Brody Knowles. But Bart Miller, give him his flowers. This has been a really good year and a half for Bart Miller on the recruiting trail after getting a couple 4-stars last year with Kai Pritchard and Champ Smith. And, of course, this is all a staff. Like, Brett Bielema had a big role in Champ Smith. Kai Pritchard, Art Sikowski had a big role there. You had Casey Toman and Landon Von Segrin in that class. And then you follow up with three in-state prospects, three of the top seven in-state offensive linemen, Mason Hallman and Soren Pfeiffer, Gavin Erickson, Staten. Like, that's a really good class. And then Corey Parker was great on the defensive side so far. You've added Justin Johnson, Daryl Flemister, Tyrone Howard Jr. He was a big part of that recruitment. He's the lead for Boyd as well. And Archie McDaniel, you know, getting some good linebackers, some power four wins there with Sean Rice in state, Anthony James out of Texas. And then Art Sikowski has been a good recruiter. It's not his fault that Illinois lost out on Camden Lapati, but does a nice job of pivoting and really pushing hard really quickly for Slade and Shaq. So, you know, you lost a lot of staff members, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. The new guys needed some time to acclimate, so you needed your holdover staff members, and that includes the recruiting staff of Pat Embleton, Nate McNeil, and all the guys under them. These guys did a really good job of hitting those positions and filling those needs because they got really good prospects at those positions. So just the holdover guys had to do well, and they did.
Yeah, that's a way better way to put it than, I mean, Justin Stepp did a good job, but you're right. I don't want to overlook what Bart Miller, what Corey Parker, and, you know, especially recently, you start landing some of those DBs, what Archie McDaniel did. That's a lot of where this class is built, is on the backs of the holdover coaches who are here. So those guys' relationships still matter. Like, this is such a transactional thing, and transactions matter too. I don't want to pretend like they don't. But you've got to have some of those relationships. And those guys have done a good job for years of cultivating, of building, of establishing the trust in those relationships. And that landed them some really good players. And again, like, if you're just going to look at this class and see number 62 and you know, throw your arms up and jump in the comments and say, this is terrible. All right, but there's a lot of layers there. There's a lot of power for recruiting wins over good programs. You're not just pillaging bottom of the ACC, bottom of the Big 12 programs to win these guys. You're going head-to-head with Iowa and winning Daryl Flemister. You're going into Texas head-to-head and winning Brody Knowles. You're going against a lot of the Big Ten, you know, established programs to win the recruitment of Bennett Conkey, of Soren Pfeiffer, of Mason Hallaman. That stuff really, really matters. And no, the 62 is not sexy, but, man, they've got some really nice prospects in there and some really nice wins. And if you want to base on, you know, a couple of years, not a couple of years, it's been more than that, 8 years ago, it's like, oh, you're beating out Toledo and Central Michigan, that's a problem. But when you're beating out Iowa, when you're beating out TCU, when you're beating out some of these programs, you have to look at it the other way too, and that matters. Who you're recruiting against matters.
On the flip side, I still got questions about this new staff, right? To be fair, like, they were kind of just thrown into the fire here, right? Like, without a lot of connections to this area outside of Jared Elliott, right? The tight ends coach that's been in this state and in the Midwest for a long time. But a lot of that defensive staff that gets dropped in here still got question marks of how do they recruit at this level. And I'm not making a grand assessment just a few months into them being on campus here, because most of these guys have been recruiting Montana or the West, right, for a long time. And that was a question when Bobby Houck and brought all these guys over here, and still got questions about Bobby Houck as a recruiter. So I didn't expect to have an answer, but that is still a major question mark, because on defensive line, I think Jordan Thomas can recruit. He's a little bit more laid back, but so is Terrence Jamison. But I think if Terrence Jamison were still here, do you have David Hill, right, who turns into a four-star prospect out of the in-state that Illinois was a major player with? I don't think you have Braden Parks, because Notre Dame is in so well there, but maybe you have somebody like David Hill. Ryan Paulson's a good get, but he's your only get on the defensive line. At linebacker, I think Roger Cooper's going to be a good recruiter, Joey, but missing out on Matthew Brady and Henry Sakalas really hurts. Going to Michigan State, and I get it, it's Pat Fitzgerald. Michigan State has a good linebacker cell. Fitzgerald's one of the best linebackers in college football history. I get why those guys would go there, but it would have been nice to get one of those. And that would have answered that question, said, hey, this guy's going to be a great recruiter. I still think he will be a good recruiter, but it's still got to prove out. Ronnie Bradford helped with Tyrone Howard and some of those DBs. And I did think Tyrone Wheatley had a nice first get in Steven Alexis, a running back with some size and some speed. I'm not concerned about Jared Elliott at all, and I think Cade Newman's a solid prospect at tight end. So I think Wheatley and Elliott will do a nice job there, and I do think Cooper will be good there. But those are the positions kind of that we got question marks about in this class, especially on defense, on the defensive line, and you would have liked to have added at least another linebacker there.
Yeah, that's 100% right, and I think some of it is building new relationships in a hurry. Some of it is you don't have proof of concept of this defense in the Big Ten. And some of it is you're just in different recruiting battles right now. And I know maybe that's – some people might shrug that off and say, well, you still have to have – you know, be a personable human. You do. But it's just different. It's just a different – I don't know if intensity is the right word, but you're really in it when you're going up against some of these Power Four programs. So that still needs to be proven. And I do think, like, you look at the defensive line in particular, there's not a lot there in prep recruiting. I think that's less of an indictment on Jordan Thomas, not even less of a reflection on Jordan Thomas and more of a reflection on where they're going to go to fill those roster spots. That's probably the portal. So you don't want to load up on a lot of guys who maybe won't be ready to instantly impact when you need them to.
Yeah, and you had a good D-line class last year. Like, that's a really good, like, right. Belongnai, Krim, Wiggins, Shaw, Alexander. That's a really good D-line class. You don't need more youth is your point. Like, I do think those roster spots you should probably put in the portal.
Yeah, but 28 class, 29, now it's time to start restocking those shelves a little bit. And I think that, in particular, with the defensive line is where we're going to see a little bit more of how that all plays out. I will say, to your point, in the defensive secondary in particular, shout out to Corey Parker, because being that holdover and helping, you know, being in the mix for some safeties, which isn't his position that he coaches primarily, but to be over there and help out and add a Tyrone Howard, who, a fun story with him, if we could sidetrack this real quick, his high school coach, Chris Maragos. Brett Bielema coached him at Wisconsin. If you've listened to, like, one of Brett Bielema's press conferences, you've heard the story of him moving Maragos from receiver to safety. That led to an NFL career. Came up a lot in talking about Miles Scott.
Does he bring up Maragos or Dallas Clark more often?
Oh, I think it's Maragos. Because the opportunity was there with Miles Scott, right? Like, that kind of all – But Maragos then convinced Tyrone Howard, hey, I know you like this receiver thing. I think you could be a really good safety. And he's very high on Howard. Of course, there's still so much development ahead for him. But Corey Parker had a hand in that, a big hand in that. And just that familiarity with the campus, with the way Corey goes about things. Like, I think that helped land Howard and, you know, go into Florida and get him. So it's just a catching up process for these guys. And that's kind of what it's going to be when you make such wholesale changes on one side of the ball, that there's going to require some long-term relationship building, proof of concept, trust establishment, all of those things.
Yeah, and I'm imagining for those guys that are coming from the FCS level, we're outside of Ronnie Bradford, right? Like, those new defensive staffers, that's where they've been recruiting this entire time. And I know Jordan Thomas has done it at Boston College, but, like, it's a little bit different when you get thrown into a sped-up process, one that includes a lot more money being part of the factor here in recruiting. And just as you said, like, you're thrown into the fire immediately in an area you don't know, in a school you don't know, and a defense that is unproven at this level. That's a lot. So it's too early to make a call on that, but it remains a question mark. And I think we kind of knew this would be the case, but it did play out that way because, you know, some of the recruits Illinois was in on well with the defensive line, and even some of the linebackers and DBs fell off a little bit because you had some guys who were really proven defensive staff members. And when you have this turnover, it leads to, I guess, some change in recruiting as well.
Yeah, in terms of fit, in terms of comfortability, all of those things, it's not like, you know, it's some of these players only fell off because of a new face recruiting them. Because there was enough with Pat, with Nate, with some of the, with Corey, with some of those holdovers. There was enough of a relationship there that you can. But I think the scheme, right? Maybe they don't see themselves as a fit. Maybe Illinois doesn't see them as much of a fit. All of those things kind of factor into this, and you make that move. And let's be honest, Brett Bielema and that move ultimately ended up happening in the time that it did, which was after the first of the year. That puts you behind, you know, however you want to imagine Aaron Henry's exit, whether that was, you know, mutually, you know, kind of, hey, maybe you should look for something, or maybe he just, however you want to view that. Illinois has been adamant that Aaron took this job at Notre Dame. So that's what we've heard, right? But, like, because of when that happened, it puts you behind at least a month in terms of continuing some of those relationships by the time you hired, got new staff in.
Well, it didn't happen on January 1st. This happened on February 1st, right? So this was...
I couldn't remember. I remember where we were. I couldn't remember when we were.
I remember it was my birthday because I was in Nebraska when we did the podcast. I had to be in the hotel doing the live podcast. So, yeah, they knew they were going to make a scheme change and, you know, it seemed to coincide with Aaron Henry leaving for Notre Dame. So, yeah, that's the big one I have. Joey, what do you got next?
But the point being, if you make that, which I guess the bowl game ran late, but even if you make that January 5th, right? Now you've got more time to just really, really build that up.
Yeah.
My next big takeaway, I do like the pivot at quarterback. Ultimately, you wish you didn't have to pivot because Camden Lapati is a very, very talented prospect. And shout out to Art Sikowski for the eval, for getting him on board, and for Barry Lunny for making Illinois a quarterback-friendly place. But the way recruiting goes, quarterback recruiting – that's done early, man. Like, those things happen. They're oftentimes the first commit in the class or one of those first commits because the timeline is different. So to pivot, get a guy in Shaq that you believe in, that you like his competitiveness, will it all play out? Will he be a starting quarterback at Illinois down the line? I don't know, man. I don't know. You don't know. We'll see how all that plays out. But you got a guy with talent, with the right makeup to come in and get a late pivot on that. It's as much about getting quality at the time they did than anything else for me. And I think that speaks volumes to what Illinois is. Like, I think Shaq, if he would have left that on, there may have been a few more power fours that sniffed around on him. We know Oklahoma State was in that mix there. But to go in and close that down, that tells me a lot about Art, and it tells me a lot about the way that quarterbacks perceive the Illini offense.
Yeah, listen, Shaq only had offers. Ole Miss had offered early, and they took two other quarterbacks. Oklahoma State offered late in the process. So this was not a highly, you know, recruited power four prospect. So there are questions about him. He's not the biggest guy, right? He's not the fastest guy. He does have a strong arm. His mechanics are great, and he is a hell of a competitor. And, you know, talking with him, I think he's got some charisma to him as well. He's been a winner at the high school level. So I think he's got the arm talent to do it. But, you know, there's some traits of why he wasn't a Power Four prospect. But the two other Power Four schools that offered him are coaches. Like, Lane Kiffin knows quarterbacks pretty well. And he was at Ole Miss when he offered Shaq. And then Morris. I mean, this guy's been a quarterback whisperer for a long time. Patrick Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, Mestemaker now, who transfers from North Texas. Cam Ward, he recruited to Incarnate Word, right? Like, this guy knows quarterbacks. So the fact that he offered him gives me some real hope about Shaq. But he at least gives you depth and some competitiveness in that room, because over the next year or two, we're really going to see what Carson Boyd and Michael Clayton are. And you add Shaq to that to compete with those guys. So I think it was a solid pivot. But the question mark I have from Cam Delapati decommitting, and I think every time we talk about recruiting, people are like, why aren't there more top 10 prospects in state? Why aren't there more four-star prospects? Does Illinois want to, or should they, shop at the top of the market when it comes to prep prospects? That's a question mark I have. Like, Cam Delapati is going to make seven figures at Michigan. Like, he is making starting quarterback money, and Michigan can probably do that because they're Michigan and they have more resources than Illinois. I don't think I'd want, as good as Lapati is, as good of a prospect as he is, Joey, do you want to pay a prep quarterback the same amount of money that a Caden Hauser could make? I'd rather save that and go find the next Caden Hauser, right? So, like, I get that people want more of these prep prospects because it's fun. It's fun to go to the recruiting rankings and see you high. And Illinois has shown an appetite to spend money on prep prospects last year, getting the four-star prospects that they did. But all this talk about they won't go get a top 10 guy, or they can't get him, some of this is choice too, because if I'm Illinois and I have a lot to replace on the defensive front and I have a quarterback to replace, those finances, I really want to put into guys with higher floors. Like, Illinois can't miss as much when they spend money, and prep prospects are still unknowns, man.
Yeah. Do they want to? I'm sure. Should they? I don't know. If all this can find its way to some sort of level, yeah, of course they should. But I'm with you. I mean, you've got to allocate your resources. We see how they've chosen to allocate their resources. And the way they've done that has also led them to wins, right? Like, you can pay a lot for a prep prospect, and that's great.
It's a great headline.
We know it's a great headline, and we know that there's talent there, right? Like, I don't think the 2026 class was a cheap class. No. The way that it was built, there's too much talent for us to believe that. But then you got to keep those guys too, right? And like, there's just long-term things that you have to think about. So do they want to? I hope. I'd have some questions if they didn't want to. But I think, you know, the answer of if they should probably lands on how close they can get all of this relegated into some sort of even waters. And until then, no, they shouldn't. They should.
I don't go with guys
who fit, right? Like, if there's someone that you think, like, man, this guy is a no doubt talent, he's a no doubt fit, you know, money is a big deal, but it's not a big, like, there's so much there, then yeah, go do that. Go do that thing and get a Nick Hankins, a Naz Rankin, and some of these guys that you got. But don't force the issue because you feel like you need the headline. I think is maybe the way I hope makes sense.
Yeah, the way I've started to think of college football now, because it's professional sports, is baseball. Like, you got the Dodgers, you got the Yankees. Illinois is not that. Doesn't mean they can't win. It's harder to win, but if you have a good coaching staff, good development, good scouting, good evaluation, you can be the Milwaukee Brewers. And you can keep some of your talent if you want to. Maybe the Brewers isn't the best example, but you can be the Texas Rangers, right? Where you can spend money and go get people, but you're not going to be able to just spend money on everything. So you have to have some good development. You have to be able to find value. And I think Illinois, what it has to do, like, are you willing to go get a Cam Delapati or a prospect of that level, right, at the expense of losing a Xavier Scott or Matthew Bailey? I'm not. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather have those proven players, or at the expense of getting a Caden Hauser next year. Like, they could just go do that again. I'd rather go get that proven transfer, even if he's down a level, than riding it all on a freshman quarterback, because Nebraska just did that and it did not work out very well.
Yeah, it's tough because I don't want to come off as like, no, you don't need top talent. Of course you do. And of course it can elevate your ceiling there. And the simple, easy, I mean, it's either Congress helps or you raise more money, right? If you can keep getting more money and you have a little bit more that you have margin for error, I guess.
I just think we have to assume like they are trying. Like that is happening. Like basketball is doing just fine at the top of the market, right? Like I don't think like the effort of getting more money or desire to spend money, like Illinois football has an expensive roster, right? Like it's an expensive roster. It's just not as expensive as Michigan, Ohio State, Oregon.
Right. And that's the thing. If you want to keep, and I also think they're trying in some capacity to get some of these top 10 guys. It's just a matter of how far down the road does it get before you realize, like, maybe this isn't going to work. I don't know. I'm really hesitant because I don't want to come off as some sort of like, don't worry about the top 10. What's that matter? Because it matters. And four stars matter, and stars matter, and getting the right fits who also are talented and four stars, all of that matters. But it can't just be you look at it and say, well, they're not getting four stars. Now what? You know, like retention has been a big part of Illinois doing what it's done the last 2 years. It's been the transfer portal, quarterback transfer portal, has been a big part of Illinois doing what it's done the last few years. So you
– and retaining, because you got to get more four stars, right? Like that's important for them to do. They got a bunch last year. Now you got to retain those guys, which they did with Khalil Valentine. They did with Malik Elzey for 3 years. Didn't end up working, but they were able to retain him. Gabe Atkins is a big recruiting win. I know he wasn't a four-star, probably should have been by the end of the thing. They were able to retain him. Like Nick Hank and Jacob Eberhardt and Nas Rankin, those are guys you're going to want to retain. They've done that with guys like Khalil Valentine. They've really supplemented it really well by finding really good transfer quarterbacks, going out and getting transfer offensive linemen. They've done really well with that. And finding great evals, like the Matthew Baileys and Xavier Scotts of the world, even Gabe Atkins.
Yeah, I think the way, as I sit here, if you're not going to be in the top 10, you need to continue, in terms of recruiting the state, you need to continue to nail your retention, like Illinois has done. And we say that in an offseason where the defensive line they did not retain. And I do not believe that was all scheme change. We're smart enough to know that.
I think Coonan and McCollum were surprised.
Yes. I think you can go down. Doesn't mean that like Durajaye wasn't a loss, but maybe you had a little bit more of an expectation for him or Jeremiah Warren or however, you know, that shakes out. But as long as you're retaining the guys that you've developed who are productive and helping you win games, then you can stomach a little bit more of being living in that 15 to 30 in the in-state rankings and popping a few top 10 guys when you can do that. But
sorry, whenever we talk top 10, I always have to do this caveat. Caden Fagan was a top 10 prospect with an 89 rating, which was a 3-star in his class. He was like number 8 in his class. He'd be like number 18 or 19 in this class. Like that's where like the top 10 thing, like I get it. It's clean. Justin Johnson, Mason Hallman, Bennett Conkey, those guys are not top 10 this year. They would have been top 10 in previous years. I just want to throw that out there because every time we bring up
in a lot of previous 10, years too, right?
Yeah.
Like it just so happens that this year, the 27 and 26 classes had some really, really good talent.
Including quarterbacks.
In the state of Illinois.
Trey Taylor and Israel Abrams. Like those guys are 5-star talents. And you went for Taylor, right? But Nebraska, I think, went for him a little harder.
Yeah, so like I'm glad you brought that up, that like the top 10 is very clean. It's also not very consistent in terms of that. But you want those guys. You want to get your Nick Hankins of the world I think Nick Hankins is going to be a pretty big stock up guy when training camp starts is my guess. But you also want to keep your Xavier Scotts, who was not a top 10 in Florida. He was not a 4-star prospect. He's a pretty damn good football player who's going to go to the NFL, who's helped you win some football games. If you can retain him because of what you've developed and you're identified, that still matters to me quite a bit too. And, you know, ideal world, the next step for Illinois, Jeremy, is you blend both of those.
Yeah.
right? In an ideal world, you win some of those four-star battles who are the top, whatever, in the state, and then you keep them around. That's,
you know,
that's how programs are fringe playoffs, I mean, that's just kind of how it goes.
It's why I'd really like to see retention rankings. If we had those, Illinois fans would be celebrating that. Like, they just have that number to look at and celebrate that. Like, but you can't plug that in. Like, it's really hard to do because – I mean, they lost Justin Bullock. They lost Eli. They lost some good players this offseason. But, yeah, they've kept a lot of them, too. Like, I mean, David Alano was the biggest that they lost. Blessed. Dergei is good.
I think so.
Dergei is at his fourth school.
One of those defensive linemen, it's hard for me to, not think it's – yeah, I think McCollum is probably that guy based on – one, I think he would have had success in this scheme. And two, you really could use that guy. I mean, I think he's probably number one for me. And, you know, we'll see what that looks like for him at A&M. But, yeah, he's one, and David Alano is probably two.
Yeah. But even a guy like Caden Fagan, like, lost his role. Able to keep him. Like, that's pretty impressive. All right, you got anything?
You kept Johnny Newton. You keep all of these guys – like, come on. Like, that matters, too.
Luke Altmyer.
And then Luke Altmyer, like, it's over now. Like, we talked about it. Luke Altmyer left a lot of money on the table last season in Champaign. He left a ton of money on the table in Champaign. That doesn't happen on accident. So, like, yeah, you want to be frustrated about this over here, some recruiting. Okay, I understand where you would want more, and that's fair to want more. That's programs pushed by wanting more. But you can't ignore what you've done and who you've kept and how you've kept them with relationships, with proof of concept, with success, with all of those things. And, like, also, let's not pretend Luke Altmyer left money. Wasn't hungry either, right? Like, so I think but that can also be true.
Yeah. All right. I'll go with another one here. You mentioned it quickly. Illinois dominated the state of Iowa this past month. I know Iowa State, Illinois should be beating, but you also beat Iowa in a lot. Like, Keon Thomas and Jake Tease went to Iowa. So Iowa did win a couple. But Bennett Conkey, Mason Hallman, Daryl Flemister, you beat the Hawkeyes head-to-head in all of those. And then Iowa State, you're able to get Ryan Paulson, Cade Newman, flip Gavin Erickson-Staten. So for all those people that are in Western Illinois, kind of on that border with Iowa fans, you can kind of, or Iowa State fans, kind of, you know, flex your muscles there a little bit. Illinois did a really good job going up against the state of Iowa. And Newman and Paulson, I look back, Joey, first guys that could be letter winners that were prep prospects from Iowa in more than 30 years. Like, Illinois just does not win a lot of Iowa prospects. So the fact that you got a couple good ones is a good sign.
Yeah, and I think in particular, looking at your wins over Iowa, because Iowa State's got a coaching change, there's still some question marks about that, and it's just not as established as it was with Matt Campbell there running the show. He's now at Penn State. You should beat Iowa just based on body of work for wide receivers, right? Like, that should be assumed, just what Illinois produced versus what Iowa's produced. But when you beat Iowa for offensive linemen, when you beat Iowa for defensive backs, that – kind of speaks volumes to me. And that's Bart Miller with Mason Holloman. That is Byron Bell with Mason Holloman. That's Corey Parker with Daryl Flemister. You beat some, like, George Barnett's a good coach. He's a good recruiter, the Iowa offensive line coach. You beat him. You took a recruit away from Phil Parker. Dude, that's, hello. Like, that's a big deal. Like, maybe those rankings and those, Holloman's got a very good ranking, but think, zoom out a little bit and look what you've done to get him and who you beat to get him. That's significant.
Yeah, and George Barnett's crew just won the Joe Moore Award, by the way, and Phil Parker, the longest tenure defense coordinator probably in college football. Yeah, and Iowa, by the way, 64th in the recruiting rankings. It's going to be a smaller class for them, so they're right there with Illinois. But, yeah, that's – I get it. You want to beat Michigan for some guys, but – what have we talked about? And I know people are sick of me saying it. Like, if you could beat Iowa, like, that was the goal. Like, Josh Whitman wanted sustained success like Iowa. And they, since they got Aiden Loughery, right, you've just seen Illinois win more of those battles against the Hawkeyes, which I still think is a huge deal because that is one hell of a program.
It is. And it's not 100%, especially in some of the suburbs. You've lost some good players. to Iowa out of the state of Illinois, and like we have to acknowledge that too, and that's part of it. But you're not just getting run over by the Hawkeye. You're not getting 63-0 on the recruiting trail by Iowa anymore. Yeah. You know, and to do it in the way that you're doing it and who you're winning. I have it's more of a question than anything, yeah. But now that we see that it's Steven Alexis at running back, what do you think of how all of that played out for Illinois? Because there was three guys. Iowa was in the mix for Keon Thomas as well. TJ Lewis ends up at Oklahoma State. Is that right, if I'm not mistaken? Then Illinois ends up with Steven Alexis. Those were the three. We were wondering how the musical chairs were going to fall during the month of June.
Yeah, and going in, like TJ Lewis, the in-state kid from Bolingbrook, he had – what was his list at the end of this thing? Like Auburn had come in. Oklahoma was in the mix. Indiana had been recruiting him hard for a really long time. It really seemed like it dried up for him. There were some measurable questions when it came to him. I think hand size was part of it. I know he was heavier than he was during the regular football season, so that was a little bit of a concern. Really good back, put great film together at Bolingbrook, and ends up getting a Power 4 opportunity with a great offensive coach in Eric Morris at Oklahoma State. But he visited UConn at one point here, Joey, so his options were really dwindling fast, and Illinois decided to go with a running back in Steven Alexis that you turn on the film, like, not quite as big as TJ Lewis, but has some size. But the speed at his size is legit. And I think there's a Illinois staff that includes the recruiting staff that has started to recruit more speedy backs. But we know Tyrone Wheatley likes some size. So Steven Alexis brings that along with Javari Barnett. We'll see how John Forster develops. But I think Alexis and Barnett are kind of your bigger options, along with Nelson Wheeler and you know, Cedric Weich, I know was like their fourth running back last year. Those guys are smaller, a little bit more scat back. But Steven Alexis, I think, has the potential to be a three down back. And it's something that I don't know if they have another guy like Barnett, I think potentially could be that. But I like him. I think the evaluation is strong. I was surprised he didn't even have more big offers, but he did have a lot of Power 4 offers. But, you know, I think there were differing opinions on who to prioritize there. But ultimately, whether it was the evaluation staff, Pat Embleton, everybody, and Brett Bioma, they decided to push the pedal with Steven Alexis. And he's a good back.
Yeah, and I think you nailed it with the three-down back. Illinois seemed like it knew what it was going after in terms of finding someone who could be a three-down back. When I talked to Keon Thomas, he said, yeah, they see me as a three-down back. When I talked to Steven Alexis, high school coach, the term three-down back came up, and I think that is something you want, someone who can hold up a little bit more in pass pro. That's a question we have about these Illinois running backs this season.
It was a big issue last year.
So you just want someone who can be that, who can be a third down guy, maybe go make some plays in the open field in short routes. So that seemed to be an intentional look in terms of getting someone who is your traditional three down guy. And, you know, ideally you want every back to be that. But when you hear it from two different running backs who they've prioritized or were recruiting in the cycle, that sends off an alarm. Like, okay, they knew what type of back they were looking for in the cycle.
The other thing, pretty good in-state class. Again, I know this is not like the top 10 thing didn't happen, but Ben Akamaki's a four-star wide receiver, and the way they played that recruitment was fantastic. Mason Hallman's a top 20 prospect. Soren Pfeiffer's a top 25-ish prospect. Gavin Erickson had several Power 4 offers. Sean Rice, you know, Illinois, I know you should beat Purdue, but Purdue's a Big Ten program with a pretty good defensive coach in Barry Odom. You beat them out for him. And Justin Johnson, another win over Iowa and Wisconsin and all of these programs that you aspire to be better than. That was a nice win. So they continue to recruit this state well. And I think it's, what, 7 in-state kids in this class right now, or 6? Like, that's probably going to go up, Joey, because they're going to evaluate the heck out of this. And they always seem to add 3 or 4 as the fall and the winter comes along here.
The Pat Ryan special will probably come back around.
Oh, yeah, 3
in
of
February.
Them? 3 Pat Ryan specials this past year, fella.
The Pat Ryan recruiting class at this point. I do like what they did in state. And again, we don't need to keep going on about the top 10, but the point being, there's still a lot of talent they got and a lot of recruiting wins they got in the state of Illinois. And those relationships are continuing to pay off. And the thing I'm curious about is you look at around the state and maybe some guys in the summer who have gone here or there. Can you be good enough and productive enough this season to keep that momentum and flip from maybe some more tenuous situations in terms of stability is not the problem. There's not a problem at Illinois. You just have to now, can you get some of that proof of concept defensively? Can you continue to keep pushing the envelope offensively and then be a landing spot for guys who are maybe interested in being a little closer to home, who are maybe interested in being a little bit more in a program with some more stability like Illinois has? That is a place that Illinois has done fairly well. I mean, relative to how regular flips are in the fall, can you be that now? Continue to add some of those in-state guys that maybe that first time around went elsewhere. I don't know. I mean, I don't say that as some sort of sly tease, like, hey, watch this guy. Some of that will manifest itself as the fall goes on, but that's something we have to monitor. And that's a place that, you know, whether it's in-state or not, like Colin Dixon comes to mind, right?
Yeah.
Matt, or Wisconsin was going through a coaching change. Illinois wasn't. And you go and get a guy who's pretty darn good wide receiver for you.
Yeah, the other little thing I would point out, Illinois getting back into Texas, and we thought this could be the case when they hired Justin Stepp, who coached at SMU, and Archie McDaniel, who's, you know, played at Texas A&M, was coached at four different schools in Texas. Like, you get a couple prospects who fall through the Power Four level, or you beat out, right, TCU for Brody Knowles, and TCU's got a heck of a wide receiver cell. They were in the national championship game just a couple years ago. That's a really good program under Sonny Dykes with a really good offense to beat them for a wide receiver. And then to pull Anthony James out of Texas, like, I'm not saying all the Texas schools are going after him, but that's what you can get some of these good prospects out of potentially the best state for high school football. I mean, Florida, Texas, I know Louisiana per capita might be the best, but like California, like those are the schools that produce all these players, and they can't get all of them. Like, all the Texas schools in the Power Four level can't get all of them. So if Illinois can get some of those guys who overflow out of there, we've seen it help Illinois. Calvin Avery and Casey Washington under Lovie Smith. And I know Marquez Beeson didn't turn out, but that was a big recruiting win to get him out of there. So to see that investment of time out of Texas is positive, because the staff will tell you, like, they got a direct flight to Willard Airport from Dallas every day. So like that helps, because Oklahoma State might be closer, right? Or a program like that, Oklahoma might be closer, but when you got a direct flight out of Dallas, it makes that trip a lot easier for that player and for their parents. So to see them kind of expand a little bit more, they do well in Florida. We know they've expanded their reach in the neighboring states here in the Midwest, but to get back into Texas, I think is a positive. You can get a player or two every class from there. I think that's always a good thing.
Yeah, getting into Texas, we know their status in Florida, and they've done a good job, particularly with defensive backs in the state of Florida. But it's kind of interesting to see how some of these out-of-state recruiting territories have cycled a little bit. Like, New Jersey was hot and heavy for a while. Art Sikowski's still very well connected there, and they're not, like, quote-unquote, out on New Jersey. But it's not been as prominent as it was early in Brett Bielema's tenure. Now you're seeing Michigan with Corey Parker, Ohio, those kind of Midwest footprint states starting to pop up a little bit more for Illinois. Now, will they go west? What was this new coaching staff? Will they have some of those connections west? They did not, to the point in 2027. We've covered just building some of those, but in 28, is that somewhere they go? So Illinois kind of wandered around a little bit out of state. There are pockets that they are very, very good in, but you're starting to see them establish a little bit more in multiple states, Texas being one, Ohio, Michigan being another kind of pairing there.
The other thing you and I like to monitor here is kind of the recruiting rivals that Illinois always has for a long time. Yeah. I felt like Minnesota kept stealing recruits from Illinois. Early on in Bielema's tenure, I think it still continues to be that way. Iowa has popped up over and over again. Michigan State, man. Like, Michigan State kind of a thorn in Illinois' side in this class, being able to get Matthew Brady out of Bloomington Central Catholic, Henry Sikalas out of Nazareth Academy. Illinois still over in Nazareth Academy all time. But also Don Spillers. This is a kid that was Daryl Flemister's teammate that Illinois was really well in on. They were pitching him as a wide receiver. Michigan State's recruiting him as a safety. I know there are points in that recruitment. Illinois felt pretty good there. So interesting that Pat Fitzgerald could be a thorn in the side, which I guess is pretty predictable given that he's got so many ties in this state. Michigan State has a lot of craziness going on in that school, but I was high on that hire. I know he's got some question marks with Hankowitz, no longer his defensive coordinator, and all of that, but recruiting-wise, I can see why he could be a thorn in the side of an Illinois program that kind of prioritizes the same kind of players.
Yeah, that's right. And like him and Brett Bielema are friends. Brett's talked about that. Well, you got a friend who's recruiting similar players at a program and that, you know, out of a state that he knows very well. So yeah, you've seen, like, for a while it was Iowa a lot. Then it got a little quieter on the Iowa front. Now Iowa circled back around a little bit more. So I think you look at programs, there's a very similar, you know, recruiting profile in terms of what you're looking for that touches Iowa, Michigan State, Minnesota. We'll see where Indiana fits into that, like, because Indiana almost overnight went from, like, in that same neighborhood to now this national contender. They came up a little bit, you know, more. Soren Pfeiffer had an Indiana offer, TJ Lewis early on with Indiana, but we'll see how they play out. Like, I don't know that you'll see a lot more Purdue, because it feels like Illinois is
Purdue is one of them.
Big yeah. Ten level. But like when it was Ryan Walters, it was like back and forth. And now, and geographically, there's a lot of overlap there. But now, I don't know that you'll see a great deal of them. Michigan. Remember Michigan for a while was really right there with Illinois. That's kind of tapered off a little bit. We'll see.
Now, Illinois was not winning. Goes. Illinois was not winning many of those. Jimmy Rolder, Trey Pierce.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Did they win?
I don't think so. I don't. Jair Hill. Right. I mean,
that should not be like the biggest surprise, right? Michigan at that point is winning national championships, and it's Michigan. But that Deacon was a school Taniele. That like sneaky came up a lot.
Yeah, Deacon Taniele, all of these in-state kids. It was like, Michigan's involved yet again. By the way, you brought up Indiana, 45th recruiting class in the country. It's interesting.
You know, we work for, I think, the best recruiting service going. But I'm also not a believer that you need to, like, there has to be layers to it. If you're just straight up scroll and see 45 for Indiana, that'll probably change, right? Like, you see 62 for Illinois. You see, would you say Iowa 64?
Yeah. They get the benefit of the doubt. Your game, I think these programs get the benefit of the doubt, yeah.
And if that's your game to just look at those and make all of your decisions and beliefs on that number, all right, I get it. But look and see how these classes are being built. And I think that tells a little bit of a different story in terms of the talent you're bringing into the program.
Nebraska, number 3 in the Big Ten. Wisconsin, number 8. I don't think I'd be too concerned if I'm Illinois, Iowa, or Indiana about those schools at this point. Not to say they can't beat you, but I'm just saying, like, where those programs are, I wouldn't switch places with them, right?
No, probably not. I don't think so. Hold on one second. I'm very annoying right now. I'm going to slide out of frame for 2 seconds.
You're
keep
good.
Talking.
I can You're hear good. You. All right. That's about all I had anyway. So we appreciate you guys listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. We have a ton coming up on the website. If you're not a VIP member, sign up now. 50% off. We got an update from Travis Branham on a 5-star prospect Illinois basketball is recruiting. You can check that out on the website. Kyle Toss continues his great player outlook series with Zvonimir Evis. It's just a great in-depth breakdown. And this weekend, we'll start with our position primers. I got quarterbacks. Joey's got running backs. I'll wrap up with our wide receivers here very soon. So if you're not a VIP member, check all of that out. Any final thoughts, Joey? Is there anything else you want to hit on?
I got nothing to do. I'm just ready to, like, talk football. I'm very excited for media days, and I need you to bookmark this with me saying that, because I'm sure the night we get back to the hotel in Chicago after media days, I'm going to be probably on one, as I typically am, and annoyed and running way too hot.
Well, the great thing
that
is,
doesn't need to be. Remind me of this.
Media days used to be what I loved about it. It's like, literally, when I started doing this, like, Ron Zook would be at a literal round table with, like, all the beat reporters sitting there just asking him questions. And then the TV people would have – he'd sit in front of a backdrop, and they'd have 25, 30 minutes, and that'd be great. And you had Radio Row and all of that. Now they're all at this podium at the same time, and you get these randoms that walk in and ask these strange questions. So, yeah, that gets a little bit frustrating. But what I love about Media Days now, Joey, and kudos to Illinois for setting this up, is we usually get our one-on-ones on the podcast. And I can't wait. Yeah. We've been trying to get Caton Hauser, so we're very hopeful and very excited that he will be on the podcast with us in a couple of weeks to talk with him, the new Illini quarterback, who, boy, there's a lot of buzz about. Brett Bielema, of course, and then Juice Clark's a fun dude. I'm interested to see, like, what he shows on the podcast, and Matthew Bailey, we could say he's the front runner heading into the season for the Lawrence Hate Media Award. Could have made the case for him last year. He just was going up against one of the best I've ever covered in Luke Altmyer.
Yeah, it's unfortunate he was going up against an all-timer in Altmyer in the way not just what he said, but how he said it. Man, Luke was as fun to interview as anybody that I've covered.
Yeah, which, by the way, I said Luke Altmyer, Mount Rushmore. The guys I've covered that were on that, Nathan Chulaus, Luke Altmyer, Nick Allegretti, Isaiah Williams. I hate leaving Sidney Brown off of that, but I think I'd go Isaiah Williams.
I don't hate that. I didn't cover Shieldhouse, so I will happily put Sidney Brown in that place. I only had 1 year of Nick Allegretti too, and he was just the thing with Nick. And
we didn't even have Palcho on there.
I know he's probably going to jump in and send 4 F-bombs, make you do another disclaimer before the pod. If you're 55 minutes into this, you can listen to our media takes with this. The thing that was best about Nick Allegretti, he played for crappy football teams. And he trotted out there after every game. Doug Kramer did some of that. Palcho did some of that too. Illinois was better towards the end of their tenures. And Nick Allegretti was a professional every time. And he said real stuff. It wasn't just, we're gonna have to go look at the film. Gonna have to look at the film. After, you know, the fourth straight loss, some of them in blowout, like, he could have milked it in. He was a real human being like that. That's what matters to us. And hopefully, and it matters to us, but hopefully it matters to people listening too, right? Because hopefully those quotes help you understand things a little bit better. And guys who are real and vulnerable, and same on, you know, that helps understand the story of the season. And people can be taken inside of some critical moments, good moments, in the case of Nick, poor Nick, bad moments, but it helps things. And that's why we talk about it in the way that we do, because it helps us, but hopefully it helps you too.
Boy, I left Mike Dudek off of that, and I hate it. Man, there were some good ones. That guy had to deal with all the injuries, plus the losing.
Pat Bryant was good.
Yeah, Pat Bryant was great. Yeah. Now,
you know, the thing is, the guys that are in the NFL, like, really, obviously making a ton of, like, we didn't talk to Devin Witherspoon a lot. I know Devin had a lot of personality because I physically observed it while he was in practice or on the field. We didn't talk really to Kirby Joseph because his rise was like, okay, are you a wide receiver? Are you a DB? Oh, you're going to the NFL in the third round. Like, it happened so quickly, there wasn't a lot of time to really get to know him. But the guys that played early went out there, your Sidney Browns, your Nick Allegretti's, your Luke Altmyer's, like that. Those are guys you've gotten to know and really develop those relationships and build that trust to hear more about them and their story and kind of these big moments of seasons.
Yeah, and that's what Isaiah was so good at. I mean, you talk about vulnerable. That kid was vulnerable throughout his career, but to watch his path from what he was a freshman, sophomore in high school to what he became at Illinois. So to see like a kid like that or a kid like Nick Allegretti who never won here and then go to win multiple Super Bowls, like, nobody deserved it more than him. And that's the fun part of covering this entire process, Joey, is seeing, you know, Nick Allegretti as a prep prospector, Isaiah Williams as a sophomore, as I do a story on Larry Boyd, and then to see them go through their journey, man, over 6, 7, 8 years, and to go have success, like, that's the best. Like, you get to watch all of that.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's why we, you know, it's changed a little bit because the schedules, our lives are just a little bit different. Guys visit campus, like, every week now, it seems like. That's why you go on a Friday night to watch some of these guys play high school football, to get to know what they mean in their community, to get to know their stories, their families. And it's all those things that allow us to come on a pod for 58 minutes and talk about things beyond just, we spent a lot of time talking about the top 10 today, but beyond just some of those numbers, to get to know these guys. I think that's what makes us better, and hopefully it makes people listening better informed about the team they're watching.
Yeah, and as fun as basketball is, like, and David Mirkovich and some of the personalities we got to cover, like, it's quicker with them, right? Like, that, it's almost like speed dating with them. There's always feels like there's a little bit more distance with that. Football, you kind of get to know these guys over multiple years, so it's really cool to be able to tell their stories.
And the other side of basketball is when it's different than football because there's just fewer basketball players, especially who play meaningful minutes. So, like, while we don't talk to them a lot during the recruiting process because that happens so quickly, during the season, it's like, hey, David, it's the 10th time in, you know, 2 weeks we've talked to you. But, like, you get to know them a little bit more in that way, whereas football, there's so many more guys to cycle through in terms of meaningful moments. And that's okay, too, because there's, you know, like, big moments that happen with guys who maybe aren't the stars that you want to talk to them. So it kind of is a give and take a little bit, but hopefully it helps people learn their athletes that they watch a little bit better.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff. We appreciate everybody watching on our live YouTube channel. Hit that like button, subscribe, and hit the notifications bell before you get out of here. We got plenty coming up at Illini Inquirer. If you're listening on the podcast, give us a follow, rating, review wherever you get your podcast. But for Joey Wagner, I'm Jeremy Warner. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. And we'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.